Minutes past two. I'm joined by Sylvia Vetter, who has a book launch tonight, Oxford Castaways, which, it kind of does exactly what it says on the tin, doesn't it? So what gave you the idea to do this book then, Sylvia?
Well, I've been writing for Oxfordshire Limited Edition since 1998. Yeah. I was their antiques writer. And I would always do different series, you see. And the last series that I was doing was called Every Antique Tells a Story. And I used to ask readers to send in their stories. And now this was before Neil McGregor did his History of the World in 100 Objects. I got in first. But of course, my stories were not, they were fun. But I was discovering that I had to work very hard at it because they weren't quite long enough, the readers' stories. So I thought, well, I've got to come up with another series. And I guess, like a lot of your listeners, I am a bit of a fan of Desert Island Discs. And I thought always that the castaway's choice of object and book often told you a lot more about them than the music they picked.
So you wanted to delve a bit deeper into their personality then, I suppose.
Exactly. Well, although it has evolved. So, for instance, castaway number one is Christopher Brown, the director of the Ashmolean, because, as you probably know, we actually have the world's first public museum in Oxford. And, of course, it was being rebuilt. So it's the obvious place to start. So when I did him, it was a little bit more focused on the objects. And he obviously picked from within the Ashmolean. But you see, by the time it got to number three, which was your own Bill Heiner, you know, it burst free a bit.
Bill will always burst free, whatever question you asked him.
And so from then on, it became much more focused, like on the castaway than on the objects. And also, as the years have gone, it grew, because it used to be two pages. Now it's four pages.
Yeah.
So it has, you know, changed along the way. And of course, I've been really very, very lucky in that, you know, I've interviewed some fascinating people.
So would I be right in saying it hasn't kind of turned out the way you envisaged it in the first place?
Yeah, I think I'm the kind of person who likes to go with the flow. I don't have, I don't go in to a project, you know, with rigid ideas. So I think I'm quite easy.
Yeah.
And I found that I was getting really interesting stories out of people without asking a lot, but listening a lot.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I really and really, these people are incredible. Some of the stories. I mean, there's Ray Falk, who actually rang me today. He was very proud today. He's not usually a man. He's so modest. But he's got the award for his house, the David Steele Sustainability Award. But, of course, what I found out by accident that as a young man, he started the Isle of Wight Festivals. And when Bob Dylan, he brought Bob Dylan to England.
So this would be, what, 68, 69?
Yes, exactly.
A long time ago,
yeah.
Wasn't it?
And on 70, there were 600,000 people went to the Isle of Wight.
Was that when the Who were there?
Doors, Joni Mitchell.
I was very young at the time, Sylvia.
Joan Byers, the whole, I mean, a huge, I mean, everybody was there.
Yeah.
I mean, the Beatles, he met the Beatles, I know that, but the Beatles didn't sing there. The Beatles came to see Bob Dylan in the early one.
Right.
But there were 600,000 people.
That's a lot of people.
And so that's why the government brought in a special bill called the Isle of Wight Act to ban more gatherings of more than 7,000 on the Isle of Wight. Anyway,
I'm amazed there's enough room for 600,000 people there anyway. The ferries must have been chocking.
Well, actually, you'll be able to find out another year, because after doing this with me, it started him going, and he found a lot more archive material. So actually, he's just finished writing the memoir.
Oh, brilliant.
And I'm sure, and really the pictures are just amazing. And so I feel quite proud there that, you know, in a way, that's just something that's flowed from it. And there are quite a few stories like that.
Excellent. What would you take? Let me put you on the spot, Sylvia. Come on, you've had all these objects, these items from your castawayees. I think I've made that word up. But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But what would you take then?
Well, I don't know if I can explain it in just a couple of minutes. Oddly enough, I would take a couple of vases. They're ginger jars that I have. And they look, anybody who looks at it thinks, you know, you say, where's that made? They say, China. But you turn it over and it says PVM. Now, I took out a really old, you know, book, the reference book, and I discovered that PVM was Petrus van Marum, and he lived in Delft in 1740 to 1780, and these vases were made in 1760, and they were failures. They were not porcelain. He was trying to make porcelain, which was like the gold of the day. I mean, it was like, you know, whatever is, you know, the fashion, the thing to have, that was the thing to have, right? And he was making that, but he failed. Meissen, of course, succeeded, but he failed. But to me, that's what antiques is about, you see. It's about the story. And there's so many stories behind those vases. I could go on for half an hour, but
so
I won't.
What you're saying is, come on, you would take something to a desert island of absolutely no practical use whatsoever. what use is that? I'd take a washing machine or something because I'd have to have clean clothes. I couldn't walk around naked and I couldn't walk around in old clothes.
Yeah, but you could wash your clothes in the sea. But I'll tell you who is practical like you, and that is our MP for Oxford East, because Andrew Smith took his garden tools. So I think, and I can tell you one thing that's different about my island to the desert island, the BBC one. Sorry, you know, I know where I am now, BBC, yeah. But I've taken liberty. And my island is called Oxtopia. And my castaways will not be alone. All 50 of them are going to be together and they're going to create a whole new society on the island.
Fantastic.
So they're going to be very pleased with Andrew because Andrew McLennan of the Pitt Rivers also took a machete. So between them, I think they'll help them survive.
Okay, and many are going to be tonight at the Ashmolean. This is like a kind of a sort of a private launch.
Well,
there
are 50 castaway features you see in the book. I've interviewed 50. And so actually 36 are coming with their guests. And a few press and so forth, and Oxford Times and some of my family.
Yeah.
And I think you're interviewing one of my castaways in a minute.
I will be doing that. Yeah.
And but, you know, actually, I think my brother's coming especially because Roger Bannister is one of them. And Roger Bannister is his all-time
what
hero.
Was it? 3 minutes 59.4, was it? I think if I...
I've got it in the book.
Yes, it will be in the book.
But, so I am a little bit nervous because, you know, I mean, there's going to be all these gallery directors, you know, heads of, of colleges and the bishop and Sister Frances. But actually, I'd say they're all going to be these quirky people too, like Ray that I told you about, like my friend who you'll be interviewing in a minute.
Who is not coming tonight? Who has given you the best excuse not to be at your exclusive?
Oh, well, there's at least two, I think.
Go on.
There's the MP for Oxford West Abingdon, the lovely Nicola Blackwood, is sorting out the world's drugs problem, so she's in Bogota.
Okay, I think that's acceptable.
I thought so, too.
Yeah, okay.
Now, there's somebody else in South America, and that is the wonderful entomologist George McGavin, who makes films for BBC, and he's filming in the dark.
Right.
So,
okay.
My mind. let's you think about that.
Let's not go there. All right. Well, listen. Have a fantastic time tonight. Will you be even more starstruck that all these people are gathered in one place?
Absolutely.
Just because of you.
Yes. Well, actually, it's because of castaway number 37, Professor James Leonard. I said to him, "Would you like a list of your fellow castaways?" And he said, "Oh, no." He said, "I want to meet them. I want a party." And I thought, you know, maybe I've got a secret sort of fairy godmother side to me. And I wondered how I could do that and achieve his wish. And that's how I found it.
Oh, well, fantastic. Listen, have a brilliant time tonight, Sylvia. Thank you for joining us. We'll be talking to one of your castaways in just a moment. Nick Pearcey in for Joe Tunis. We've talked to Sylvia Vetter, author of Oxford Castaways, which is launched tonight at the Ashmolean. Let's talk to one of the castaways themselves. And one of the featured personalities in this book is the writer Simonetta Agnello Hornby. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I hope I pronounced your name right. That would be the first
thing. Could have done Hornby better. Agnello is perfect.
that's fantastic. What brings a, an Italian lady to these shores, first of all?
Well, I'm a Sicilian lady to start with. What brought me to these shores was love. I fell in love with an English man at 18 and married him.
So how does a Sicilian lady meet an English man at the age of 18 then and fall
in
love?
Well, because she's sent to Cambridge to learn English. I regret not Oxford. But I lived in Oxford as a married woman.
Oh, because you lived in Kennington, didn't
That's
you?
Right.
Yeah. So what was life like there could I describe you then as a foreigner in a strange land? Would that be fair?
Yeah, I think it was right. What was life? Actually, it was lovely. I don't know why I always took to England very easily, and I'm very different, but I did. And I had two children, so I spent most of my time pregnant. And when I was pregnant, I kept on marching on the Women's League marches in those days, 1970s, yeah. 1971, 72. And studying law, because I was an Italian lawyer, I had to become an English lawyer.
So you kind of have to re-study for that, do you?
You did then, and now there's the EC, so you can actually transfer. But I had to do all the exams, but that was quite fun.
Yeah. So what did you specialise in when you were doing law?
What I did specialise at then was children's law.
Right.
I was working on legal aid, representing parents and children in care proceedings.
Okay. What is it that got you in touch with Sylvia Vetter? How did you two meet? Because you're one of these, well, very exclusive people that are in this book.
Absolutely. Well, at that time, actually, we met because we had two little children, and we were both part of the, what's it called, the babysitter club or something like that. So we were a number of mothers and fathers who babysat for each other. We had little money, so everything was done on exchange. And then we kept our friendships forever.
And it's just carried on.
Absolutely,
carried
it's
on,
lovely.
And it will carry on as well.
I think so.
Have you actually had a flick through the book to find out who was cast away with you on this Oxtopia, this fabled land where everybody's...
I have looked at all the people, and Sylvia has told me at length of each of them.
Yeah.
So if I haven't read it, I know of them. Sylvia's been fantastic on that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it should be a good do tonight anyway,
I
certainly.
I think it should be fun.
We will talk more in just a moment. Simonetta is my guest in the studio, and we'll chat more about the objects and the extent to which she'll sort of customise her desert island in just a moment.
BBC Radio Oxford.
Good afternoon, it's Nick in for Joe, and Simonetta Agnello Horby is my guest.
Good afternoon.
Italian, but I made this mistake before, and you corrected me, and I should have asked the question then, so I apologise. Tell me the difference between an Italian and a Sicilian.
I shall, with a little example.
Please do.
Just the same difference as a Welsh person and an English person. Different racially, different language, one a bit below the other, treated a bit worse, and with a lot of ties. And if they were to speak to another foreigner, they would defend each other greatly, saying we are British, but within ourselves, we are different.
Right. So you would say that you are superior to the mainland then?
No, I would say that we are separate from the mainland, and I'm happy with that.
Okay. Right. Well, thank you for clearing that up. You are a renowned author in Italy.
I am, actually.
But we don't really know much about you over here.
Absolutely.
Does it get lost in translation, or is it something that... do the ties to your... You know, to Sicily, are they so great that's the way you prefer to
well,
do it?
There are two answers to what you say. First of all, very few Italian writers are well known in England. Scalvino, there's Camilleri, there's Eco, and there's Lampedusa. And the others are not that well known. Why? Because the British read British literature, which is huge, and Italians import British and American literature. So that's the first reason. The second reason, I think I must say, is obviously my books are not like that much in Britain. And why not? I mean, I've been translated in 20 foreign languages, so my books have been translated. And, for example, in Australia, The Almond Picker, my first book, did very well, was a bestseller, but not here. But I'm not pushing it too much. I mean, the last book is called The Nun, and I'm fond of it. One is fond of one's books, like Child.
Yeah.
But I like to be here, Simonetta Hornby, the lawyer.
Right.
I feel more as a lawyer. It doesn't mean that I don't want you to buy my book and read and advertise it. Of course I do. But I quite like to be a lawyer because that's what I've been for 30 years and that's what I feel I am.
So so you're living two separate lives then, really, aren't you? You have your Sicilian life in literature and your English life in law.
I have my Italian life in literature because, of course, I'm read all over Italy, although I'm described as a Sicilian writer.
Yeah.
And then I got my English life. I live very well with two lives because I'm a Sicilian and I'm an English woman. I vote in Britain. I'm very devoted to Britain. It's my new country. It took me 30 years to apply for citizenship, but I'm as British as you are, although I may not look it and I may not speak like that,
no.
But I feel like that. And I live very well with those things. What I don't like very much of being very well known in Italy is that if I go to the shops to shop without makeup, they say, oh, you look like the writer, or are you the writer? You don't look that good, you were better in photographs. So there's a bit of being a public figure, which
yeah, sure.
I'm not particularly shy, but I like my privacy.
Yeah, okay. This may seem a very strange question, but it's just kind of come into my head. You don't do the translations.
I certainly don't.
But do you check them to make sure the meaning is the same?
Now, it's very difficult. First of all, to be a translator is a hugely important job. A book called The Leopard, which was huge bestseller 40 years ago, was translated and didn't sell. Then it was retranslated by actually an Oxford Don, and it just did brilliantly all over the world. So the translator is an artist. I speak English in my way, which is not perfect, but it's my English. And obviously the English of any translator is different from mine. And with Almond Picker, I had the difficulty that I couldn't read myself in English because it didn't sound mine.
Right,
so
okay.
Don't ask me to do ever a reading of me translated. I can do it in Spanish and French, maybe because they're similar, the languages, maybe because the translation is more like my French or Spanish, but in English, it's painful, but I'm very grateful to my translators, of course.
But are there phrases that sort of trip off the tongue in Italian that have no meaning in the English language?
Yes, there are, and vice versa. Also, I never analyse my Italian because I don't. I'm not illiterate. So sometimes I use words in Sicilian, not because I want to, but because I think they're in Italian. The dialect and Italian just merge somehow. So sometimes I think the poor translator's got problems. I've had extraordinary letters from translators saying, please explain that. But the most fascinating letter was a translator who says, I want to have the recipe of something you wrote about. I said, I got to ask my mother, and I did.
Now, the book you brought in is called The Nun. This is sold well in Italy, and now this is the English translation.
That's right.
Is that right?
That's right.
And has that just come out over here?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, the very best of luck with that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for coming in. And enjoy meeting your fellow castaways.
I will. It would be fantastic.
And to compare, all you know, the compare and contrast. What is the thing that you've taken to the island, by the way?
I took a little, it's called the little pagoda, Sylvia tells me, and you know, she's right on those things. It's a little golden wooden house, which is worth nothing. And we inherited from a great aunt of my husband. And it has got boxes, little boxes. And what I do whenever I have children staying with me, which is all the time, I tell them right there, whatever you wish to happen, I will never read it. And we will pray that it will happen. And when I moved house, I had to empty all the papers from there. And there were masses of little pieces of paper. And I didn't read not even one.
Well, why not?
Because it's not right. The children trusted me that it would be theirs and only theirs.
Right.
And I think it would have been wrong. You've got to respect the little ones.
Yeah. So this little thing with all the bits of paper is still there, still intact.
Still there, now with my grandchildren's pieces of paper.
So who is actually going to be brave enough to read them then?
I don't know. When I die, they will.
Because this can tell a whole family history, and you know.
Well, one of the children who was very close to me, when I said I was going to empty it, because I have to empty it at times, he said, can I retrieve my things? And he showed me one of the things he had written, which was ever so sad.
Are you going to share that with us, or is it too personal?
Yes, he said, I wish my mum and dad were together again.
Oh, that's very nice.
But it was nice that as an adult,
yeah,
we saw it, and that's life.
Yeah, absolutely. Have a fantastic evening tonight.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for coming in and sharing your story. Simonetta Aniello Hornby. Oh, I got it wrong. You see,
Like the Hornby trains.
I can't believe it. Thank you very much indeed for coming in. It's 2:40.